Okay, today we are diving deep into something that's, well, absolutely foundational to the AI tools changing our world right now. Large language models, LLMs.
And they truly are the engine behind so much of what's called generative AI. The AI that isn't just analyzing data, but actually creating new stuff.
Exactly, creating and our source material for this deep dive, it's a really solid article from hackscience.education called Large Language Models.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And our mission today is really to cut through the noise, pull out the essential concepts, and give you those genuine aha moments about how these seemingly magical tools actually work without getting totally lost in the weeds, you know?
Right. Think of it as getting the core operating manual, just explained clearly.
Love that because, yeah, sometimes they feel like pure magic. So, all right, let's unpack this. At the most fundamental level, what are these LLMs?
Okay. So at their core, LLMs represent a pretty significant leap forward in AI. They're specifically designed to generate, well, human-like text. But the really crucial idea here, I think, is that they're built upon what are called foundational models.
Foundational models. Okay, that sounds important. Why?
They really are. Because these foundational models, they're trained on just absolutely massive amounts of diverse data. This gives them a broad general knowledge base. And this foundation enables something powerful called transfer learning.
Price for learning. Okay.
Yeah, so instead of building a completely new model for every single task, you can take this one foundational model and sort of adapt it for many different things.
Okay. So one giant model trained like crazy can then pivot to writing a screenplay or summarizing a legal doc or maybe even generating computer code. That versatility comes from the foundational model and this transfer learning.
Precisely. It's a unified approach that allows for incredible flexibility across domains. And, that deep, broad training also makes them surprisingly good at spotting nuances like grammar issues or inconsistencies. The key word really is generative. They create new content based on all that knowledge.
Okay, creating new text, but how? I mean, how do they take all that training data and actually produce coherent, human-sounding sentences?
Well, the core mechanic is actually surprisingly simple to grasp, conceptually at least. The
Right.
scale is mind-boggling. But the idea is this. LLMs work by predicting the probability of the next word in a sequence based on the words that came before it. They learn these patterns by analyzing truly vast amounts of text data during training, basically, soaking up books, articles, websites, just all sorts of written material.
So it's constantly thinking, okay, given these words, what's the most likely next word to follow?
Exactly. And during that training process, the model is constantly tweaking its internal structure, potentially trillions of tiny connections, to make those predictions more accurate, closer to the patterns it sees in real text.
Right.
So when you ask it to generate something, it typically picks the word with the highest probability, then uses that word as part of the sequence to predict the next one, and so on and so on.
Word by word, building the response based on probability. It's kind of like autocorrect on steroids, right? Predicting the best next step in a really long chain.
Yeah, that's not a bad analogy.
But processing that much data and making those predictions effectively, that requires some serious technical horsepower, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the real breakthrough, the kind of aha moment here, was the development of a specific architecture called the transformer architecture.
Transformer.
Yes, this is what fundamentally enabled the creation of these powerful foundational models and consequently the LLMs built upon them.
So that's the secret sauce, the transformer.
In large part, yeah. It really revolutionized how models handle sequences of data like text. It allowed them to weigh the importance of different words in the input sequence much more effectively than previous architectures could.
Okay, so the transformer lets them read and predict effectively at scale. Got it. So what tasks can we actually use them for? What does this predictive capability really unlock?
Well, because they are essentially foundational models adapted specifically for natural language processing, or NLP, and language generation, their capabilities are incredibly broad. The power really lies in them being general purpose. They can tackle many different tasks without needing entirely separate models or, vast amounts of specific training data for each individual one.
Okay, so give us some examples then, maybe from the source. What kind of things can they actually do?
Sure. With the right input, they can answer questions, draft documents like essays or reports, summarize lengthy texts, translate between languages, and even, as you mentioned, generate computer code.
Generate code.
Yeah.
That versatility is just kind of mind-blowing.
It is. And their real-world applicability spans across industries. Think about summarizing customer feedback or classifying emails, powering sophisticated chatbots, drafting marketing copy, assisting with data analysis, or even extracting specific entities like names or dates from large documents. They can be applied to almost any task that involves text, really.
They sound incredibly capable, almost like they know everything, but they don't, do they? There must be limitations.
Oh, absolutely. A critical limitation to understand is the training cutoff. This refers to a specific date. The model's knowledge base is built only from the data it was trained on up until that point in time.
So if a model's training data ended in, say, late 2023, it won't know about anything significant that happened in 2024.
Precisely. It has zero information about events, discoveries, cultural shifts, anything that occurred after that cutoff date. Its understanding is basically a snapshot of the world as it existed when its training finished.
Right.
That's why you can't ask most public LLMs about the latest news or very recent scientific breakthroughs and expect an accurate, up-to-the-minute answer.
That's a super important point for anyone using them. Definitely. Okay, so they're based on foundational models. They predict words. They use transformers. They have this knowledge cutoff date. Are all LLMs fundamentally the same, though? Or are there variations?
Yeah, the source highlights a few distinct types. First, you have the base LLMs we've mostly been discussing, the versatile general purpose models. They're good at many things, but, you know, might not be perfectly tuned for very specific or highly reliable enterprise tasks without some further work.
Okay, the standard model. Got it.
Then you have instruction-based LLMs. These also use a base model, but they're designed to follow explicit instructions given in your prompt very, very directly. Like, write this in the style of Shakespeare, or extract the key dates from this text. You're giving it clear commands.
Ah, so you're being very specific about how you want it to generate the output.
Exactly. And then there are fine-tuned LLMs. This is where you take a base model and you train it further on a smaller, highly specific data set, something related to a particular task or domain.
So, like, you might fine-tune a base model using thousands of medical research papers, maybe, or internal company documents?
Right, exactly. The goal is to make it exceptionally accurate or helpful for that specific area, improving its performance beyond what the general base model could achieve on its own. Now, this does require additional data and training time, of course, but it results in a more specialized model.
Base, instruction-based, and fine-tuned. That structure makes a lot of sense. Now, I've also been hearing quite a bit about small language models or SLMs. Are they just like smaller versions of these big ones?
Essentially, yes. SLMs are basically scaled down LLMs. They're designed to be more resource efficient, easier to deploy, more accessible, while still providing many of the benefits you get from the larger models.
So maybe they're faster, cheaper, but maybe less capable than the giants like GPT-4. Is that the trade-off?
Well, they are generally smaller, yes, and require fewer computational resources, lower cost to train and operate. And techniques like knowledge distillation, where you train a smaller model to mimic a larger one and transfer learning, help them perform pretty well on tasks like analysis, translation, summarization. But here's where it gets really interesting, and this is a significant aha from the source material.
Okay.
The success of some SLMs, like the Phi series from Microsoft, for example, isn't just about being smaller. It's about strategic data selection.
Strategic data? You mean they don't just use all the data they can find?
No. And this kind of flipped a lot of conventional thinking on its head. Instead of just prioritizing sheer quantity of training data, they focus intensely on quality.
Quality over quantity.
Exactly. This involved using things like textbook quality educational data, carefully curated synthetic data sets, and really select web data.
So it's like teaching a student with, I don't know, high quality textbooks instead of just letting them browse the entire internet randomly.
That's a great analogy, actually. This approach focused on building common sense reasoning and a solid general knowledge foundation from these highly curated sources. And the surprising part is that in some cases, SLMs trained this way have been shown to match or even surpass the performance of much, much larger models on certain specific tasks.
Wow. Okay. Quality over quantity really can make a difference, even at this scale. That's fascinating. All right. Shifting gears just a bit. How do developers and companies actually use these models? Are they all locked away by big tech, or is there a way for others to build on them?
Yeah, the source differentiates between open source and commercial LLMs. You have companies like Microsoft with Azure OpenAI and OpenAI itself offering powerful commercial models. These are often designed for stability and enterprise use. Thousands of businesses reportedly build applications and services right on top of these platforms.
So that's how many companies get access to the sort of leading edge models.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's also a really growing ecosystem of open source models. that you can, in theory, download and run yourself, assuming you have the right hardware and technical know-how. And interestingly, the source notes that the fundamental concepts and how you actually interact with these models, often through APIs or software development kits, SDKs, are quite comparable across different providers, whether they're commercial or open source. The basic ideas are similar.
Right. Okay, speaking of interacting, how do we, as users, tell these models what we want them to do? What's the mechanism?
That's done through prompts. A prompt is simply your input text, usually just in natural language, describing the task you want the model to perform. And the output you get back is also text.
So if I wanted to write an email, I just type, like, write an email asking my boss for a raise. That's simple.
Pretty much, yeah. That's the power of the natural language interface. It feels intuitive. Now, the art and science of designing and crafting those prompts effectively is what's called prompt engineering.
Prompt engineering. Okay, that sounds a bit like programming, but using words instead of code.
It's often described exactly like that, yeah. A new paradigm in programming the model. It involves understanding the model's capabilities, how it was trained, and how it tends to respond to different phrasing, different kinds of instructions. Effective prompt engineering is really crucial because a well-crafted prompt dramatically increases the likelihood of getting useful and relevant output back.
So it's not just about asking a question. It's about structuring your request in a way the model understands best. Giving it context, maybe?
Precisely. Prompts define the task, but can also include specific instructions, the content you want processed, maybe examples of the desired output style, or even cues to guide the model. And it's very much an iterative process.
Iterative.
Yeah, you send a prompt, see what you get back, and then you refine your prompt based on that output to get closer and closer to what you actually want. Trial and error.
Trial and error to get it just right makes total sense. Okay, now, when the model is processing that prompt and generating text, what's the basic unit it's actually working with internally? Is it letters? Words?
Good question. Those units are called tokens. Tokens are the fundamental pieces of text that LLMs process. They can be whole words, sometimes parts of words, or even punctuation marks.
And tokens have practical implications beyond just being the internal unit.
Crucially, yes. Tokens directly affect computational costs. When you use a model through an API, for instance, you're often charged based on the number of tokens processed that includes the tokens in your input prompt plus the tokens in the generated response.
Ah, okay. So longer prompts and longer answers can actually be more expensive.
Exactly. And managing tokens is also really important because the LLMs have a maximum limit on the number of tokens they can handle at any one time. This limit relates to their context window.
The context window, what's that?
Yeah, the context window is basically the amount of text, the sequence of tokens that the model can see or consider when it's making its prediction for the next token.
So it doesn't process the entire internet simultaneously when it's answering me. It focuses on a specific window of text around where it's working.
Right, exactly. The context window helps the model understand the relationships and dependencies within that immediate text sequence, which leads to more accurate and coherent predictions. The maximum size of this window varies significantly between different models, by the way.
Okay.
It's another constraint to be mindful of, especially because, as the source notes, in practical applications like RAG, the usable length of the context window for your input is often shorter. You need to leave space for the generated output as well.
That makes perfect sense. You need room for the answer within that limited window.
Okay, so we've talked prompts, tokens, context window. How does the model actually understand the meaning of the words within that window? It's not just matching patterns, is it?
Not just patterns, no. That's where embeddings come in. Embeddings are these fascinating machine learning tools used to represent text inputs, could be words, phrases, even whole documents as numerical vectors.
Numerical vectors, like lists of numbers. How does that help with meaning? Well, these vectors are designed to capture semantic similarities within a vector space. Think of it like this. Imagine a giant multidimensional map where every word or piece of text has a specific location, a point. Words or texts with similar meanings are located closer together on that map.
So king might be close to queen on this map, and maybe the vector distance between king and man is similar to the distance between queen and woman, those kinds of relationships.
Exactly. That kind of semantic relationship could be captured mathematically. The closer the numerical vectors are in this high-dimensional space, the more related their meaning is considered to be. These vectors, which are just lists of floating point numbers, are learned during the model's training and act as a way for it to understand the semantic essence of the text.
Wow.
The source mentions their particular relevance in retrieval augmented generation, RAG, techniques. Embeddings allow you to represent external documents as vectors and then perform semantic searching based on meaning, not just keywords, to find relevant information before feeding it to the LLM to generate an answer.
That's a really helpful way to visualize how the model sees meaning. Okay, so we use prompts, it works with tokens within a context window, it understands meaning through embeddings. Can we influence the style or maybe the randomness of the output beyond just tweaking the prompt?
Absolutely. That's controlled by model configuration parameters. These are settings you can often adjust that influence how the model generates text and, importantly, its level of randomness or predictability.
Randomness, you mean like how creative or surprising it is?
Precisely. Parameters like temperature and top are the main ones that steer this randomness. A lower top value, for instance, means the model is more conservative. It only considers a very small set of the most probable next words. This usually results in more predictable, focused text.
Okay.
A higher top, on the other hand, lets it consider a wider pool of less probable words, which can potentially lead to more diverse or creative outputs.
Interesting. And temperature?
Temperature works similarly. Higher temperature equals more randomness, lower equals less. The source notes that while temperature can technically go higher, values above, say, 1.2 tend to produce pretty nonsensical text. It suggests the 0.8 to 1.2 range might be good for more creative tasks.
Okay, got it. Temperature and top are like the creativity sliders. What about those penalty parameters mentioned? Frequency and presence penalty.
Right, so frequency penalty discourages the model from repeating the exact same token based on how often that specific token has already appeared in the generated text. It basically helps prevent it from saying the same word over and over again.
Okay. Avoids repetition.
Yeah. And presence penalty is a bit broader. It discourages the model from repeating any token that has appeared so far in the output, regardless of frequency. This tends to encourage it to introduce new concepts or move on to different topics. So a high presence penalty really pushes the model to explore new ground within its response.
So one stops repeating the exact same word, the other pushes for new ideas or topics.
Roughly. Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. And then there's legit bias, which is a pretty powerful tool. It lets you directly steer the likelihood of specific tokens appearing in the output.
How does that work?
You can effectively ban certain undesirable tokens by giving them a very low score, like an age of 100. Or you can make desired tokens almost guaranteed to appear by giving them a very high score, like 100. Smaller adjustments just nudge the probability up or down a bit.
That sounds like you could really force it to say certain things or completely avoid others.
You can, but the source rightly cautions that it requires understanding how words map to specific tokens, which isn't always obvious. And excessive or inappropriate use can easily lead to nonsensical, repetitive, or even biased outputs. It's a precise tool that needs careful handling.
Power, but you definitely need to know what you're doing. Fascinating how much control you can actually have over the output, though.
It really is. And finally, just to round things out, the source briefly mentions a couple more related concepts. Model adaptation, which is the broader idea of customizing models for specific use cases like the fine-tuning we discussed earlier.
Right.
And the really intriguing idea of emergent behavior.
Emergent behavior, what's that?
Yes, these are capabilities or behaviors that the model starts to exhibit that were not explicitly programmed or even anticipated by the developers during training. They seem to sort of emerge from the sheer scale and complexity of the training process itself.
Wait, things the model can just suddenly do that nobody actually designed it to do? That's incredible, and maybe a little spooky.
It is. It really highlights that we're still exploring the full potential and maybe even the fundamental nature of these incredibly complex models.
Wow. Okay, so let's try and wrap this deep dive up. We've journeyed through the fundamentals of large language models, starting with how they're built on foundational models, enabling generative AI and transfer learning.
Mm-hmm. Their core mechanism of predicting the next word based on probability.
Right, the revolutionary transformer architecture that makes it all possible. Their vast capabilities from answering questions to writing actual code.
The crucial limitation of the training cutoff date, remembering they don't know recent events.
Definitely. The different types, base, instruction-based, fine-tuned, and the surprising power of small language models, especially when driven by strategic, high-quality data selection.
Yeah, that quality over quantity point is key. Plus, how we access them through open source and commercial options.
And how we interact using prompts, the whole art and science of prompt engineering.
Exactly. The fundamental units they work with, tokens, and how they impact cost, and the limits, like the context window.
how they grasp meaning through embeddings, those vector maps.
And how we can steer their output using those configuration parameters like temperature, top, and the penalties, all operating within the context window.
Phew. Understanding these building blocks really does seem key to making sense of this current wave of generative AI and figuring out how to use it effectively.
Absolutely. It demystifies it somewhat, doesn't it?
It really does. Hopefully, this deep dive has pulled back the curtain a bit and given you listening some valuable aha moments about the core technology powering so much of what you're seeing and probably using today.
So maybe a final thought to leave you with. Considering those emergent behaviors we just touched on and that surprising success of quality data over sheer quantity in SLMs,
what unexpected applications or capabilities might we see next? Things emerging from these models that aren't even being specifically designed for right now.
That's a great question. What stands out to you most from everything we've discussed today? Something to think about.